If the Earth were a big waiting room with numbers being called out, the number being called about now would be in the range of 7.4 billion. For some of us, that number represents a doubling of the Earth's population in a lifetime. There are a lot of people on the planet now, with more to come. Many organizations and individuals focus on population as a critical issue facing the planet, including the organization once known as Zero Population Growth, or ZPG. Today it bears the name Population Connection, but the same essential mission. John Seeger is the CEO of Population Connection and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. John, welcome.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
Hi there. So why did the organization change its name?
Well, we changed our name about 12 years ago. There are a couple of reasons for it. The one I like to cite the most is that the old name seemed to scare the children a little bit. We found that younger people didn't really connect with the name Zero Population Growth. It came into really public prominence in the late 60s when I was young. And so for those of us of that generation, we know what it meant and what it focused on, but we found younger people, it didn't really work for them, and so we went out and asked people why they cared about population, the people that do, and what they told us all over the country was because it connected with other things they care about: poverty, the environment, civil conflict, social justice, the economy, and so that's where we got the name.
Now, I noticed, too, that you mentioned young people were among the concerns here. Message seems to be getting across, though. I was just reading this morning that figures indicate that the nation's teen birth rate dropped to its another low as of the most recent accounting.
That is, in a time when good news sometimes seems, as they say, scarce as hen's teeth, this is very, very good news. There's probably no single thing that we can do to make a brighter future for our economy than to get to a situation where children are not having children.
Is there a level of, I don't know if fear is necessarily the right term, John, but I mean, are there people who are concerned about the population either stabilizing or dropping?
Well, I was speaking to some college students in the Los Angeles area recently, and that question came up. And for those who are familiar with that area, I said three numbers to the students that they instantly understood: 405. Anybody who's ever driven on the 405 through the L.A. area would be hard put to think we're running out of people. In fact, our population here in the United States and globally is still growing. What's happened, and in our view, and we have a point of view, the good news is that in some places, including the United States, Americans have, people here have decided on their own to have smaller families. That's their choice. Yet most couples still have two children, so we're not in any danger of running out of people.
Is it still, although it's not the name anymore, is Zero Population Growth essentially just replacement of people on the planet now still the goal of the organization?
We try not to get too fixated on numbers per se, because if you're not careful, you sort of lose the forest for the trees, if you will. We have found that when you empower women and couples, and when they have access to family planning or are able to choose make their own choices, really, they make intelligent choices. And it turns out that means we're going to have smaller families, and we think that can mean a bright future for the world. But we're not in the business of trying to tell people how many children to have. First of all, nobody would listen to us. And second of all, it seems a little rude.
All right. So what are the approaches that Population Connection takes to try to get its message across?
We focus on two things, Jeffrey. First is we believe it is essential that the next generation of Americans understand population challenges. And so we have a program that's used in about 50,000 schools around the country, including all across Oregon. We never, ever try to tell students what to think. We try to get them to think about these issues. We put facts out on the table, and in interactive and interesting hands-on activities, they work with their teachers to sort through things and come to their own conclusions. We reach about 3 million students a year here in the U.S. through that program. It's the only national program of its kind. So that's our first thing, goal, if you will, or mission. The second one is to advocate for family planning, voluntary family planning. We believe very strongly that, as I said, every woman and every couple here in the United States and around the world should have the tools and the power and the knowledge that it takes to make their own decisions about when, whether, and how many children to have. And that's not always easy because there are all sorts of barriers out there.
Including the leaders of some countries. I was reading just yesterday about Erdogan in Turkey, essentially making it almost un-Islamic for women not to have larger families.
Yes, that is exactly what he said yesterday. I do want to note, though, that you find as much diversity of perspectives in predominantly Muslim nations around the world as you do in predominantly Christian nations. There are Muslim nations that are very supportive of voluntary programs for family planning. There are Muslim countries that are very much opposed to it, and we see the same thing across the board, regardless of the religion.
Population, population growth, and stabilizing that growth, a topic here on the Jefferson Exchange with John Seeger, who is the CEO of Population Connection, which up until 12 years ago was known as Zero Population Growth. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Ann and Eugene. Welcome to the exchange.
Thank you. So overpopulation is causing war, climate change, pollution, species extinction, and resource depletion. And yet, I don't know of a politician in the United States that will even say the word overpopulation for fear of these right-wing patriarchal religions that want to control women by controlling their access to contraception and abortion. And how can we deal with the problem of overpopulation when people are even afraid to say the word? Thank you.
Thank you for that, Ann. Appreciate it. John?
That's a great question, Ann. I would note two things. First of all, it's really interesting that the surveys that have been done, and the American Association for the Advancement of Science did one about a year ago, find that Americans, by a substantial majority, believe that overpopulation is a problem. So it's a question of the maybe some of the politicians being a little behind the public, which is often the case. The second thing I want to say is that, and I worked in politics for quite a while, I probably pay a little less attention to what politicians say and a little more to what they do, and because that's really what we elect them to do, not give speeches, but to cast votes for and against things. And many politicians, including your two senators in, I believe Ann was from Oregon, Oregon or California, all four senators, are very supportive of programs here at home and around the world to empower women and to provide resources for family planning. It's a big battle, and there are many people in politics who are opposed to it, and that's their right. But there are also many politicians, and I consider that an honorable word that sometimes gets dragged down a bit, are doing a good job, and Oregon and California both can count senators among those ranks.
Do population issues in the political realm, John, get tied up in issues like Planned Parenthood, which has been such a lightning rod this year?
Absolutely, and it's so strange because, it's both strange and not strange, I suppose. Planned Parenthood provides a broad spectrum of reproductive health services to women and men around this country. Nobody has to go to Planned Parenthood if they don't want to. People go there and they get the respect and the services they need. It's just bizarre to me to see that they have been the target of not just rhetorical attacks, but in some cases, physical attacks. And that's just appalling to me. If we really believe in freedom in this country, and if we believe in letting people chart their own course, why on earth would we not allow people to have access to reproductive health services?
Specifically to certain parts of the country, including our part of the country, a recent release from Population Connection talks about demographic trends, specifically in Oregon, and it shows that, you know, things are going well here in a number of realms. Is there a certain level of defensiveness that comes with being in your business about people thinking that you are talking about trying to either make the population growth slow or reverse or make the median age older or something?
Oh, I find the best defense against defensiveness is optimism. I think I try to get up every day and look for the bright side of things and not be a Pollyanna about it. And this report that you mentioned and the book, The Good Crisis, which incidentally is available as a free download at thegoodcrisis.org. If anybody wants it, if people want a paper copy, they'll have to pay for it, but the download is free, talks about how we can have a healthy economy and a healthy world without population growth. And there are some very positive trends in your part of the country. There are also some things that are not so positive, and I'd be glad to talk about either or both if we have time.
Sure. Let's hear about the positive first, then you can tell us about some of the stains on there.
Sure. Well, one of the real positive trends has been a dramatic decrease in teen birth rates. That's a very, very strong indicator of long-term prosperity, in my view. And so we're seeing really positive trends there. One of the real challenges is that we have so many children still trapped in poverty. And I'm focusing on children because, that old saying turns out to be true. That's really where the future is. And even though we've made progress, Oregon, for example, could do more, I think, to improve its graduation rate. These days, if you don't have a high school diploma at a minimum, you're going to be left out. It's just that simple. And there's a lot of room for improvement across the board in the country and also in your neck of the woods.
John Seeger is the CEO at Population Connection, the group that was formerly known as Zero Population Growth, obviously heavily involved in population issues. He is the co-author of a new book, The Good Crisis, How Population Stabilization Can Foster a Healthy U.S. Economy. This is a discussion you're more than welcome to join with your own observations about population growth and how we handle it in America and the world. 800-838-3760 to join us by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Grumpy John in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you very much. I would like to address the problem of facts versus religion. You know, Jeffrey, the fact is that the religious people say it is against God's law to abort a fetus. Actually, God herself aborts 30 to 50% of all pregnancies. Now, that these are miscarriages. Many of them are in very early stages of the pregnancy, but the very fact that their God chooses abortion 30 to 50% of the time should allow the religious people to ease up a little bit in their rabid anti-abortion stance. If you can't follow your God's example, what are you worshiping? What are you actually doing? And there's a problem with the communication between facts and religion.
All right.
30 to 50%, God aborts them herself.
Miscarriage. Yeah, that sort of thing. Okay. Thank you for that, Grumpy John. Appreciate that. But I imagine this is an 11, if not 12-foot pole for a group like Population Connection, John.
Well, we try not to shy away from important issues. I think it's worth noting that people of faith, and that includes most people in the United States, have a wide diversity of perspectives on these subjects. For example, if you look at Catholics, let's just talk about that for a moment. Catholics in the United States have smaller families than Protestants. When you look at the rate of use of modern birth control among women across the board in this country, it's 99% at some point in their lives. Among Catholics, it drops all the way down to 98%. So I think we have to be a bit careful about applying labels because there's a real diversity of perspectives. At the same time, the hierarchy in the Catholic Church and in other places seem to have a little different perspective than the rank-and-file believers. I'm not sure I'm the one who can fix that, however.
True, without getting actually elected pope, and that doesn't seem entirely likely.
I'm not. It's not in my plan.
Okay, let's talk about the issue that is often raised, though, by the slowing of population growth, which is the driving of the median age upward and the pressure on social structures like Social Security, like Medicare, pensions generally, where you have fewer workers than supporting the people who are taking money out of the system.
Well, let's talk about Social Security, and I want to mention two points. Social Security is facing, in the coming decades, a very probable shortfall. That could be fixed by doing one very simple thing. Take off the tax cap. A flat tax, and there's some people who are always talking about flat taxes, except apparently this one, a flat tax on Social Security on all earned income would essentially eliminate any possible shortfall. Right now, those people who are lucky enough to make more than about $118,000 a year don't pay Social Security tax on the money above that, whereas the people who are getting up early and going to work at lower wages are. So that's half the story. The other half is this. Yes, you do run into significant costs for people who are in their later years, but raising children is very expensive, too, both for individuals and for communities. And when you have smaller families, you don't incur as many costs on that end. So you can shift some of the resources to help out those who may need some help in the later years.
And on the topic of children, we welcome in Sandy in Mount Shasta. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to John Seeger, the CEO of Population Connection.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Well, my perspective, I've been working with really young children in the last few years, and I think the primary reason we're not able to solve all kinds of seemingly intractable problems like population, like pollution, like global warming, et cetera, is because the way we raise our children does not leave them empowered enough. Somebody said that children go into school as question marks and come out as periods. I forget who said that, but it's like we rob children of their natural creativity and make them into people who spend the rest of their lives with a lot of their emotional and energetic bandwidth taken up with the just kind of reliving the lives of their parents, is one way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't have access to the creativity. I think the only thing that's going to save the human race is if we actually focus on children and on protecting them in the sense of allowing them to grow up to be who they are entitled certainly, but destined to be, which we don't know. We keep imposing our own assumptions on children, and we just don't have adults around who have apparently the bandwidth to really take a look at the problems and say, damn, we got to solve this stuff. This has gone on generation after generation after generation to the point where we're at the point of destroying our planet. So we need a lot more resources, a lot more parents understanding the realities of child development so that they don't impose their own will on children to the point where they just sort of grow up learning to go along, to get along.
All right. Thanks for the thoughts, Sandy. Appreciate that. John, some thoughts from you?
Well, just that early childhood development is probably the critical factor here. By the time kids start, if you will, formal education in kindergarten, there's this huge gap between the children who were fortunate enough to have the kind of early learning environment, which includes good nutrition and health care and all of that, but also engaged family members who are talking to them and reading to them and doing things that really, if you have the time, and sadly some parents have to work two and three jobs and they don't have the time, but if you have the time, really don't cost much of anything to sit out in the backyard and do what I do with my granddaughter. We watch the hawks fly by and we talk about that. That is just so important. And if you do that, you put kids so far ahead of the game. And I think that's a way of giving them that head start that makes all the difference. But it's a little out of my area, but like most people, I have opinions, and I'm glad to share one.
The observations of the American economy and its relationship to population growth include, as you already mentioned, child poverty, which in Oregon is above 21% as of September of last year. So we're talking one in five kids living in poverty. Are there recommendations that Population Connection makes for trying to ensure that fewer children do grow up in impoverished households?
Well, I'd just like to offer two thoughts. First, I would suggest that we might want to think about them differently. There are, there's a little false specificity here, but this is what the numbers say, there are 181,714 children in poverty in Oregon. Maybe it would be good for us to start thinking about them as 181,714 future doctors, future entrepreneurs, future social workers, future engineers, future chemists, because that's what the promise is if we can do what needs to be done. The number one thing to do, which I mentioned before, a bit of a broken record, but it is so important, is to break the cycle of teen pregnancy. The next most important thing is to make sure that kids do get that healthy head start. Early childhood education, getting off on the right foot, every kid should have access to the kind of early learning that that makes all the difference. And that isn't just, obviously, it's the right thing to do, in my opinion, from an ethical standpoint, but it's also the right thing to do from a broad economic standpoint. The prosperity of this country is going to depend on the workforce of tomorrow, and those are those kids right now who are trapped in poverty.
Even though the teen birth rate is coming down, could it come down further if there weren't quite so much opposition to talking about things like contraception?
The United States is still lagging far behind many other developed countries. If you look at Europe, the conversations around teen pregnancy and sexuality are public health conversations. And that seems to work really well. If you talk about these things as a matter of public health, you tend to get much better results. I think it was Dan Savage who said it's such a shame that Australia got the convicts and we got the Puritans. We sort of got the short end of the stick here, I think. So we just need to have more open and honest conversations about the facts of life. And one of the facts of life is teen pregnancy if we don't do it.
All right. You must be pleased, though. Is that a pretty consistent downward trend for the last 20 years or so in the teen pregnancy rate?
It is. We're down 61% in the United States over the last 25 years. So it's something to be positive about and to celebrate.
All right. Definitely celebrate it at the Population Connection, which is the name of the group that John Seeger is the CEO for, formerly known as Zero Population Growth. John, thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much, Jeffrey.
All right. Take care.